The 16th section, Purusham Somya Uta Hastagrihitam Anayanti Apaharshit, Stem Apaharshit. The 16th section, last section, what I already told you actually, the servants of the king's court bring this thief. The 16th section talks about it. 16th section alone talks about the Aham Brahmasmi, that factor, already told you. Hastagrihitam anayanti. They catch asti, catch somebody. Hastagrihitam means they catch him right. And they bring him as a thief. Steyaha means a thief. Steyam apaharshit. Steyam apaharshit. They bring this thief. Parashum asmai tapata iti. Parashuhu means a sword. Periya vaal. Parashuhu means a big, big sword. And then this parashu is not ordinary parashu. They put the, it is not open, it does not say, I explain all those things, very, very small sentences. They put this strong iron sword in the fire. Now, leave it for long time in the, there's a big heat, the fire is there. They put this sword in the fire, they heat it, burn it for hours and hours and hours. It becomes a hot, actually it becomes no more a black sword, it becomes a red sword. Now why? The iron sword getting burnt in the fire becomes red in color. Because burnt, so hot it is now. Now the punishment is, this person, they ask, Upay doesn't say, very small sentences. They ask, are you a thief? The king has to ask, are you a thief? This person says what? No, I am not a thief. I did not steal anything. I am not a thief. I am not a thief is a statement revealed by this person who was caught and brought to the court. And the king says, now, you have to touch this, hold this hot burnt sword. This person was asked to hold this hot burnt sword. If his statement is a fact, I am not a thief is a fact, then he will not be burnt by the heat of the sword. The heat of the sword will not burn or afflict this person if he is not a thief. If his statement that I am not a thief is a fact, he will not be afflicted by the heat. Otherwise, if his statement is the falsehood, I am not a thief is a falsehood, if it is not a fact, then he will be afflicted by the heat of the sword. He will get burnt by the heat of the sword. This is the lesson here. Okay. But we are not interested in the story. The lesson is, the sword stands for samsara. Sword symbolizes samsara. And the heat of the sword symbolizes the all forms of the pain, mental agony we go through, the agony caused by problems, mental agony, mental pain, suffering, vedanai we go through, caused by the problems of life. In life, so many problems we have. And the problems arising from three different sources. One's own self becomes the source of problems. or anybody else other than oneself becomes source of problems. Sometimes neither me nor anybody else, but natural crises and calamities become the source of problems. So there are varieties of problems every human being has to go through in life, arising from three different sources, either one's own self or others or natural calamity, nature's anger sometimes, like Madras Vellam, now the floods in Chennai, tsunami some time ago, something happens. So we have to, we go through the always a human life, we have to go through problems, and these, if you analyze these problems, they arise from only three different sources. So these problems arising from three different sources cause mental agony, mental pain, sorrow, sadness, grief, you know, unbearable pain. It happens. Therefore, that pain is called apaha. Pain is also called tapaha. Heat is also called tapaha. Just as heat scorches everything, mental agony also scorches. Just as heat scorches everything, dries everything, the mental agony also can scorch our mind. Therefore, the mental pain, mental agony is also called what? Tapaha. And now, the sword stands for samsara. The heat of the sword stands for the pain, mental agony, which scorches our mind. Agony, pain, sorrow, which causes our mind, caused by problems arising from three different sources, symbolized by the heat. So, tapatrayam is symbolized by heat. Samsara is symbolized by the sword. And I am not the thief. That statement is what now? Is like what? Aham Brahma Asmi. That stands for Aham Brahma Asmi. The fact. Now, you are asked, what are you? Aham Brahma Asmi. Aham Brahma Asmi. That vision is very clear for you. Aham Brahma Asmi. That vision is very clear for you. Then you will not, when you live in this world of the samsara, you will not be afflicted by the heat of tapatrayam. Your statement is a fact, then you will not be affected. It's a statement of fact. Aham Brahma Asmi is a statement of fact. If it is a fact for you, you will not be, you will be in samsara, you are in the world, you go through all sorts of problems in life. No problem can cause any pain to you. In fact, you will not have problems at all. Problems also are not there for you. Therefore, problem caused pain, agony also will not be there for you. Problems will not be there for you. Problem caused pain will not be there for you if it is a fact for you. Aham Brahma Asmi is a fact. If you have understood, if Aham Brahma Asmi is not a fact for you, if it is a falsehood for you, if it is not mithya, then what will be a fact for you? Aham, I am body, I am an individual enjoying body, must come as a fact for you. That is the, you mistake the falsehood is a fact for you, isn't it? Aham Brahma Asmi is a fact for you, you will not be afflicted by samsara tapatrayam. If it's a falsehood for you, which are very clear for you, you can't help but getting afflicted, burnt by samsara tapatrayam. then finally what? You will die in ignorance. This is what is said in this statement. Therefore, through this analogy, through this small story, also what Upanishad wants to say is, as long as what is fact is not a fact for you, then falsehood becomes the fact for you. Then you can't help, you can't escape from samsara. So samsara nivrittihi, freedom from samsara, moksha is possible only in understanding the fact and accepting the fact as a fact. Otherwise, your falsehood becomes the fact for you. Then there's no freedom. Then what is said in this last 16th section? With this, the 6th section will be over. Let us read quickly and then I'll stop it. I'll tell you what is it. The important lesson here is, there's a beautiful analysis of Mahavakyam. Adi Shankar Bhagavatpada's analysis of Mahavakyam is the most important lesson in this thing, which I had to do it for you. Okay? Today I'll start it. Tomorrow you can come back and listen to me. Tomorrow morning. Tomorrow also I'm going to do the analysis of Shankara's. The story part is not very important. How we analyze this Mahavakyam. You have simply understood all these days. You understood the what now? He tells Tattama Sikshete Keto. Tat stands for existence. Tvam stands for consciousness. And you arrive at it what? Body. I itself am consciousness. And there is no reality other than consciousness. A consciousness alone is in the form of the existence enjoyed by everything in the world. Therefore, Aham Brahma Asmi, everything else here is Brahman. Therefore, I am the whole. This is a fact. And all the forms and names come and go, they change. But this is revealed in this Mahavakyam. But how to analyze the Mahavakyam is the next lesson. The most important lesson is what? Analysis of the Mahavakyam, which is not in the mantras, which is presented by Adi Shankara Bhagavatpada's commentary. So I have to, that is the proper lecture. Okay? Nothing else is that. All these things are very simple. Okay, we will do that anyway. This is the last section, the 16th section. Satyam alone has substantiality. Mithya has no substantiality. Therefore, when you are holding on to the fact, then you are not afflicted by samsara. When you are holding on to the falsehood, then naturally you can't help becoming the victim of samsara. That is what is the lesson given to the last story part. It's not really story. There's a small Hattupanishad states. We'll again come back to that tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, please come again at the same time. Here, Shankaracharya presents the analysis of this Mahavakyam. Tattvamasi Mahavakyam. Here, to understand this analysis of Mahavakyam, we have to understand certain basic things. Let us start from here like this. We all know entire Veda Shastram is a pramanam, is a means of knowledge. Veda is a means of knowledge. So we say the basic thing we need to understand analysis of Mahavakyam. So means of what? Pramanam. Veda, Vedanta Shastram is a pramanam, is a means of knowledge or instrument of knowledge. So now we have so many pramanams. We have the all sense organs, organs, all our sense organs service means a punch from our body. We understand this one small fact. Every sense organ serves as a pramanam, means of knowledge, in the field of its own function. Every sense organ serves, every pramanam serves as a pramanam only in the field of its own function. Which means eyes serve as means of knowledge of the light form colors. That is the field of the eyes. In the field of listening, sound, the same eyes cannot function, cannot serve as means of knowledge. The field of sound in other object. So every pramanam serves as a valid means of knowledge only in the field of its own function. Just because I serve as means of knowledge in the field of its own function, in knowing the form, color, light, etc., eyes cannot validate or invalidate the function, another pramanam, object revealed by another pramanam. Eyes cannot say sound is there. Eyes cannot reveal sound is not there also. Eyes cannot support the ears, or eyes cannot contradict the ears. One pramanam cannot support or contradict another pramanam. The next point. See, it's a very important lesson. All this time we have only said like a story. The important lesson is only here. One pramanam cannot validate or invalidate, cannot support or cannot contradict another pramanam. What ears can prove cannot be proved by the eyes. What eyes can prove cannot be validated or negated, invalidated by the ears. What nose can do, these two pramanams cannot validate nor invalidate. So one pramanam, one instrument of knowledge can function, can serve as a means of knowledge, instrument of knowledge, only in the field of its own function, which means it cannot validate, invalidate, support or oppose the other pramanam, other instrument of knowledge. Why? Because the one pramanam does not have access to the object revealed by another pramanam. Does not have access. This must be very clear. Can eyes say there is no sound? Can eyes say there is sound? No. Eyes cannot support the ears, nor can the eyes contradict the ears. Why? It has no access to the other object. So eyes can serve as instrument of knowledge only in the field of its own function, its own area. Therefore, if this is very clear, from here we have to move on to what? Vedanta Shastram. Therefore, Vedanta Shastram is a pramanam for Brahman, Brahma Vidya, for the knowledge of the absolute reality ultimate truth, Brahman. Vedanta Shastram serves as an instrument of knowledge. Means, no other pramanam can support or validate or invalidate the Vedanta Shastram. No other pramanam. So science can never validate or invalidate Vedanta Shastram. Science cannot, need not support the Vedanta. Science can never contradict Vedanta. Is it clear? This is with all the basic things we have to understand. To analyze the Tattvamasi Mahavakyam, we have to remember all these facts. So what is a pramanam? A pramanam is an instrument of knowledge, a means of knowledge. And here Vedanta Shastram is a pramanam for Brahman, for the absolute, arriving at the absolute reality, self, atma. And what is the nature of the pramanam? Every pramanam can function only in its own field. Even no pramanam, no one pramanam, no instrument of knowledge can support the other instrument of knowledge. No instrument of knowledge can contradict the other instrument of knowledge. One pramanam cannot validate or invalidate the other pramanam. Therefore, Vedanta Shastram being the pramanam, other pramanams cannot validate or invalidate the Vedanta Shastram. So what is revealed by one pramanam cannot be contradicted, cannot be supported by another pramanam. Therefore, what is revealed by Vedanta cannot be supported or contradicted by other pramanams. Okay, this is very clear. Therefore, our reasoning cannot validate. Reasoning cannot validate or invalidate Vedanta Shastram. Why? Why reasoning cannot? Because science is reasoning. Science cannot validate Vedanta or invalidate Vedanta. Why? Because science has no access in the field of Vedanta. Science, reasoning has no access in the field of Vedanta. Similarly, no experience also can validate Vedanta. Not only science, reasoning, no other experience also can validate Vedanta. We do not deny the possibility of experiences. We have no question at all. We don't doubt. Is it possible to have experiences? We say, of course, it is possible for us to have experiences. It is possible for one to have one's own dream experience. Your dream experience is possible for you. My dream is possible for me. Okay. Even though I cannot prove my experience to you, still experiences are possible for me. So subjective experience is possible. Mystic experiences are possible. Mysterious experiences are possible. Innumerable countless experiences are possible. Great, tremendous, extraordinary, supernatural experiences are possible. Supernatural, extraordinary experiences are all possible. Mystic experiences are possible. Mysterious experiences are possible. Innumerable, countless experiences are possible. Subjective, one's own experiences are possible. But experiences are possible, but no experience can validate or invalidate Vedanta. Okay, these all basic theme are very clear before we start analyzing the Mahavakyams. Okay. Then what is the Vedanta then? We can say Vedanta is a valid means of knowledge. So we can conclude saying that Vedanta, what we arrive at through Vedanta is knowledge. What we from Vedanta, we understand knowledge. Which means we do not require any other special experience. What we understand from Vedanta itself is knowledge. We do not need any experience to validate what is revealed by Vedanta. Hope you understand this very important sentence. We do not require any special experience to validate the knowledge we get through Vedanta. We attain through the study of Vedanta. If you want experiences, we can really go for experience, no problem. Now I want some mystic experience. You can make efforts. You can go for such experience. I want some mysterious experience. Go for such experience, no problem. If we want experiences, you know, some spiritual experience, mystic experience, mysterious experience, any special supernatural experience you want, you can go for, you can make all possible efforts and you can go for experience, you can have the experience, no problem. The thing is, we should not go for experiences. We should not go for experiences to validate Vedanta. Okay? If you want experience, you can go for experiences. But we should not go in for experiences to validate Vedanta. Because what Vedanta finally gives itself is what? Final valid knowledge. What Vedanta gives is the final valid knowledge, which cannot be validated by any other experience. So we need not go in for any experience to validate Vedanta. Is it clear? It's a very important lesson. It's a very subtle lesson. It's not for the beginners. Okay? Definitely it is something very serious lesson. I'm teaching you. But tomorrow morning, please come at the same time. Because I'm going to analyze only present the analysis of chakras. This is only I'm going to present tomorrow. No more. Tomorrow will be just a lecture on this. I'll restate this only. So Vedanta gives the valid means of knowledge means. Therefore, as a seeker, one requires understanding of Vedanta. What a seeker requires is only understanding of Vedanta. What do you need for moksha? You need to understand the Vedanta properly. That is enough. Understanding Vedanta properly means what? Vedanta itself gives a final valid knowledge which you need not wait for an experience to happen. Okay. Because how to understand Tattvamasi must be become very clear here. Here it is possible, we can have some doubts. We may have some doubts. You know what are the doubts possible? Now when it is said very clearly, it is possible for us to have this doubt. When we study the Vedanta Shastram, we get the knowledge. The knowledge we get from the study of Vedanta is what here we say, people say, we understand everything intellectually, but we are not able to experience. We understand everything intellectually, but we don't experience it. Then people think, if you say knowledge book, we only get the book knowledge. Words, when you read the words, when you read the book, we get the book knowledge, we get the knowledge intellectually. So how can we say that book knowledge is the final knowledge? If according to them, final knowledge is experiential knowledge. So they think what now? It's a general understanding. We always say there is something called intellectual knowledge and experiential knowledge. And here I want to make it very clear. It's like saying somebody goes to Badrinath, comes back and tells you what all the person has seen in Badrinath. And listen to the other person, you have the knowledge of Badrinath. So you understand everything, or you see Badrinath even on television, how the Ganga is flowing, how the temple looks and how the people live there, how cold it is, the climate and the food, what is available there, how comfortable it is, how nice it is, how not nice it is, everything will tell you. You also see through television and you understand. This knowledge is what now you have gained. Knowledge you have gained through watching something, television, or reading a book, or hearing from other person. When you get the knowledge, this is what now is knowledge. It is non-experiential knowledge. But when you go to Badrinath directly and see everything, it is experiential knowledge. So non-experiential knowledge and experiential knowledge. When you hear somebody coming, see, when you hear the noise of somebody walking, you make out somebody is walking. But who the person, when you go and open the door and see somebody standing in front of you, have the experiential knowledge of somebody. So you, in any knowledge you gain through inference also what comes under the category of non-experiential knowledge. Any knowledge you gain through inference or by reading a book or by listening to other person, or by watching something, you gain that knowledge comes under the category of non-experiential knowledge. This non-experiential knowledge alone is by mistake said to be intellectual knowledge. With the very expression intellectual knowledge is a wrong expression, inappropriate, incorrect expression. Why? Because, please understand very carefully, why should we not say intellectual knowledge? Pooja Swamiji, whoever would have heard Swamiji, you all would have heard this. Swamiji makes fun of it. There is no dental knowledge. There is no physical knowledge. There is no, Swamiji says this, nasal knowledge. No dental, nasal knowledge, dental knowledge, physical knowledge. Knowledge means only intellectual. knowledge happens only, rises only in the intellect. Knowledge is intellectual. Therefore, it is wrong to say intellectual knowledge. Intellectual becomes what? An adjective for the word knowledge. If we use, suppose we can use the adjective only to distinguish one thing from the other, isn't it? If there are two parts, if there are two parts and one is blue in color, other one is red in color, then to distinguish the one from the other, you have to say bring the blue pot, means the blue adjective is used to what, for what? To distinguish one from the other. Adjective is always used to distinguish one object from the other objects or the other one. If the two are not there, what is there? Only one. Adjective is not necessary. When should I use an adjective? Adjectives can be used only if there are more than one thing, more than one. Two or more than two are there. And if you have distinguished one thing from the other, adjectives can be used. Adjectives should be used. If what is there only one thing, then using adjective is incorrect. Suppose you tell somebody, you know, please come for the wedding and bring your family, somebody tells. Bring your family means what? Bring your family, that's all, finished. He does not need to say bring your first family. Bring your first family means adjective is wrong. You know why? Unless this person is married and has two, three families, at least two families, bring your first wife and his her children with first family. Don't bring the second family, that's the meaning. Isn't it? So bring your first family, he need not say. Why? There is no second family or third family for him to use the first adjective unnecessarily. Bring your family is enough. Bring your family to my home for lunch means you have only one family. Bring your family is enough. If the person says bring your first family or second family, adjective will result cause a problem. Adjective can be used only to distinguish one given thing from another given thing. Okay, so intellectual knowledge means in that expression, the word intellectual, which is an adjective, is incorrect adjective. Why? Because knowledge is intellectual. There is no dental or nasal knowledge. Many types of knowledge are not there. Only knowledge is intellectual only. There's only one knowledge which is intellectual. Therefore, that adjective itself is what? Should not be used. If we say intellectual knowledge, it is like saying bring your first wife. Means what? Bring your first family. It's a wrong expression. Only one family is there. So in the word intellectual, the adjective is not right. Why? Because if there is a dental knowledge and nasal knowledge, you have to distinguish this knowledge from other knowledge. You can say intellectual knowledge. But knowledge is intellectual. Knowledge happens only in the intellect. Only one knowledge is only one which is intellectual. This knowledge does not arise anywhere else. Therefore, adjective, using the adjective unnecessarily is an improper expression. There is no such thing called intellectual knowledge. Knowledge is intellectual. knowledge takes place only in the intellect. Therefore, intellect, that we should not, it's a wrong expression. Then what should we use in that place? We can say non-experiential knowledge. Okay? Non-experiential knowledge and experiential knowledge. We can divide this into two as what? I read a book, and reading the book, I learn all about England. Before coming to London, I did not have an idea about England at all. I read the history of England. I read the geography of England. I understand lots of things about England. I understand about the authors, the writers, the Shakespeare, the play Stratford, and where drama happens, what is Wimbledon, what is Wimbledon. Everything I learn about England. And then I read the England also, what now I see on the television, how the roads, how the people live, everything I see. I have the non-experiential knowledge of England. I have the knowledge of England. I'm not ignorant of England. I have knowledge of England, but my knowledge of England is not experiential knowledge. It's only non-experiential knowledge. Then when I get a visa, I get a ticket and fly and live there for 6-7 months, I have some experiential knowledge of England. Is it clear? This is called, we should not say intellectual knowledge, not, it's only non-experiential and experiential knowledge. So what all we have understood till now? Vedanta Shastram is a pramanam for knowledge of the reality. And any pramanam serves as a means of knowledge only within the field of its own function. No one pramanam, no one means of knowledge can validate or invalidate what is revealed by another means of knowledge. Therefore, Vedanta being the pramanam, what is revealed by Vedanta cannot be validated or invalidated, supported or opposed by any other pramanam, including science and reasoning. Because science is what now? Reasoning is science. Not only science, also our experiences also, personal experiences or any type of experiences are possible, but no type of experience can really validate or invalidate what is revealed by Vedanta. Why? Because science or reasoning has no access in the field of Vedanta. And we should not say when we study Vedanta, first we get the intellectual knowledge, then, but still we don't have the experiential knowledge. We always complain. And here I want to correct this. People, everybody says we have intellectual knowledge. We have intellectual and we have understood intellectually, but it is not really, it has not happened for us. Something has not happened. We are not experienced Brahman. We understood Brahman intellectually, but we are not experienced Brahman. That is why here we have to understand this. There's something called, it's not intellectual, not expression itself is wrong. Why? Because the word intellectual as an adjective is improper to say, because with the 2-3 types of knowledge are available, then to distinguish one knowledge from one type of or other types of knowledge, you can use the adjective. We don't have many types of knowledge. Knowledge is intellectual, therefore improper expression, incorrect expression. Then what should be the expression? What should we use that then? Instead of saying intellectual knowledge, we should say what? Non-experiential knowledge. Non-experiential knowledge and experiential knowledge. By read in a book, through the book, by reading the book, I get knowledge of a given place. and that I have non-experiential knowledge of England. When I go there and see everything in person, I have experiential knowledge of England. This is something. Okay. By studying, by reading a book, the knowledge I get is what? Non-experiential knowledge. When I go in person and see, I get the experiential knowledge. So generally, we have this problem. We all say what? Book, by reading a book, we get only book knowledge. We get only non-experiential knowledge. Words can give only non-experiential knowledge. Words cannot give experiential knowledge. This is a general common view of all the people. This is a contention. What is the general view of all the people? Words can give only non-experiential knowledge. Words cannot give experiential knowledge. This non-experiential knowledge is what? Jnanam. Experiential knowledge is vijnanam. Okay? Non-experiential knowledge is jnanam. Experiential knowledge is vijnanam. So generally, there is a view. General rule is what? Words can give only non-experiential knowledge. Words cannot give experiential knowledge. Okay? It is the general rule. In Sanskrit, general rule is called utsargaha. Utsargaha in Sanskrit language, utsargaha means general rule. And then there's exceptional rule. General rule also, this exceptional rule is called apavadaha. Apavadaha means exceptional rule. What is the exceptional rule? Words can give non-experiential knowledge. Words also can give experiential knowledge. Utsargaha means general rule. Apavadaha means exceptional rule. What is the general rule? Always we all have this notion view. Words can give only words can give us only non-experiential knowledge. Words cannot give experiential knowledge. What's exceptional rule? Exceptional rule is words can give non-experiential knowledge. Words also can give experiential knowledge. Words can give both. This is the exceptional rule. Okay. So, Shankar Gaudapada here in his commentary, he actually refutes this thing. What? This Vedanta comes under the next category. Words can give non-experiential knowledge. Words can give experiential knowledge also. Have you got the point? So Vedanta comes under this second exceptional rule. Vedanta can give jnanam. Vedanta can give vijnanam also. Okay, I'm going to stop here now. I'll continue tomorrow. Tomorrow, I'm going to just present only the analysis of the Mahavakyam presented by Adishika Bhagavatpada in his commentary. So I only today I prepared you for that. I went to teach you few more things. Okay, it is not complete. It is not complete. I only started. See, there are few basic principles we need to understand before we enter into the analysis of the Mahavakyam. That's why I'm teaching you all these things. Because there are many, always people think we study the Upanishads very well, we understood very, very well, but still we're waiting for experience. If we say we're waiting for experience, means we have not understood Vedanta. We have yet to study the Vedanta. Okay? That's what the important lesson. So tomorrow we'll continue with that. Tomorrow I'm going to present this analysis only. We'll see tomorrow. Vedanta by itself is a valid means of knowledge. Vedanta gives a final knowledge. It need not be validated, supported, cannot be invalidated by any other experiences. Yes. But we all have the opinion, we all think that we need experiences.
Yes. Wow.
That is something which has to become very clear, isn't it?
Yes.
If Vedanta, what Vedanta gives is the final knowledge means, why do you wait for another experience? Uh-huh. That is why I'm doing this lesson tomorrow. Because something very important, very subtle. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamiva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Sri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om.